The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
The Crossman Conversation is hosted by John Crossman. John's heart is to see our community of leaders unite around what we have in common. John will be joined by political leaders, religious leaders, as well as activists making a difference in our nation. Here is your host for the Crossman Conversation, John Crossman.
Hello, this is John Crossman, and welcome to the Crossman Conversation. Mike, got a quick story for you, buddy.
Another quick story.
I got a quick story for you. You know, I went through some challenging times in my life, and going through those challenging times, I had to come to grips with kind of like my core wounding. You know, all of us have like some of our childhood. And honest to goodness, I had to learn that my core wounding was not dealing with some of my feelings, and in replacing that, trying to just focus on success, right? And success was kind of my addiction, if you will. Like, I was trying to do that. And what I had to learn through that is I think I have some sort of deep-rooted fear of failure. Like, I think a lot of times in my life, if you had grabbed me in a moment, sort of pulled the veil back from my heart and said, how are you feeling today? I would say, I feel like a failure. Even when I was, like, getting a big award or something, and that's what I felt. So I had to really, like, work that through. So we have a special guest today, Dr. Joseph, and he knows a lot about how to help people in dealing with failure and success and that balance of that. And so I'm super excited because he's going to solve all of my problems, is what I'm trying to tell you. So Dr. Joseph, are you there? You're here with us?
Yes, I'm here. I'm here.
Well, thank you so much. You're calling in from Brooklyn. And so we're glad to have you on the show. And tell us a little bit. Tell us first a little bit about your background, Dr. Joseph.
So, you know, just like you, I've been like obsessed with like trying to obtain that success.
Uh-huh.
And you know, as I'm trying to accomplish my goals, I've actually come across a couple of hurdles, mm-hmm. quite a few. You know, and I wanted to document that in a way that, you know, it can be shareable to others as well. And you know, as I am, you know, basically going through my college years, I remember going in, you know, majoring in mathematics, and I thought I was going to become a pharmacist. So prior to majoring in mathematics and ultimately obtaining my degree there at Queens College, I went through the gauntlet of chemistry courses, physics courses, trying to find my way to get to that pharmacy role, and I never ended up becoming a pharmacist. But I did take on, you know, mathematics, and I wanted to apply it in some way. Mm-hmm. So as I'm, you know, utilizing my analytical skills and quantitative skills that I've learned, I realized that I could not get internships, and I was getting rejected time and time again. And, you know, I wanted to create more so of a resume, and hence this is why I call it the perfect rejection resume, because there's nothing perfect about rejection and failure. However, it is perfectly inundated in my story. And hence, this is why I'm here, and I'm glad to talk to you guys about that today.
Well, man, rejection. I don't want to be rejected, Dr. Eli Joseph. That sounds terrible. Like, well, what would rejection teach me?
Oh, yeah. I would assure you that you got to be used to rejection if you want to succeed and you want to make it, you know, as far as like trying to obtain success. But rejection and failure will teach you a few things. It will teach you that rent is due every day. And what do I mean by rent being due every day is that, you know, your effort is your currency, and you always have to put forth that currency. And whether you win or lose today, the effort as far as paying your rent and the landlord being your goals, you always have to put forth that effort. That's what rejection will teach you, and that's what failure will teach you. Failure will also teach you that time is your biggest competitor, right? And when I say that time being your biggest competitor, we oftentimes hear, you know, we hear people say, oh, I'm my biggest competitor, and I'm competing against myself. And I always disagree with that notion, because what happens if you failed? And you failed, and it's not your fault that you failed. However, what happens where, you know, there's things that you can't control. You can't control some things. You can't put it upon yourself. However, you have to face time, and time is constantly moving. It's a unit that is constantly moving. And once you realize that, number one, time is your biggest competitor, and rent is due every day, you realize that you have a lot to learn from your failures.
Wow. That's interesting. I was recently thinking about this in the context of my youngest daughter, and that she's a weightlifter. She's on her girls' high school weightlifting team. And what's funny is she gets to choose the weight that she does for a competition. So you pick three weights, and then if you do them or don't do them, that's kind of it. Well, when I see her in these competitions, Dr. Joseph, every time she does like bench, it looks like she's doing nothing, right? Like, you know, she just does what I think she feels comfortable in doing. And so I had to say to her, I'm like, you don't know your success until you hit failure, right? Like, until you hit the bench that you can't do, you don't realize that that number right below that was your highest success. So I was thinking, gosh, does that have an application in life, that we really don't know how successful we are until we hit a point of failure? Is that true?
Yes, totally true. And to your point, as far as weightlifting, we're used to hitting that mark, right? Up until we want to achieve more, and we want to have, like, let's say, hit the next PR, mm-hmm. our personal best. In order for us to hit that personal best, we have to know our limits. The limit, that's our ceiling for today, right? If we fail at bench pressing, let's say 180 pounds, that is our limit for today. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean it's our limit for our lifetime. We just have to get there, and we need more reps. This is why we need more repetition, you know, more practice at that higher level. This is why we practice, and, you know, it's always important to obtain that level of repetition, so that way we can get to the next level. And this is why world records exist.
Right.
World records exist because of the simple fact that we failed so much to achieve the next best thing, that by the time we reach it, by the time we reach that world record, we reach the other side. It's a huge deal. And I talk about that in the book as well, The Perfect Rejection Resume, where it's like, you know, we realize that it is possible to accomplish something that is impossible. Hmm. And once we realize that it's possible to accomplish the impossible, then it's possible. It's also possible that nothing is impossible. So, you know, this is why it's important to basically try to shoot for the stars. You know, you never know what might happen. And even if you fail today, it doesn't mean that you're going to fail tomorrow.
You know, I was thinking about when you were talking about the movie Dunkirk, and there's a powerful scene in the movie Dunkirk when the soldiers are getting back over to England, and they're getting off the boats, and they're really demoralized, obviously, because they were evacuated and escaped. It was a terrible situation. And a man is giving the soldiers blankets, and the man says something like, you know, congratulations, something of that kind of nature. And one of the soldiers said back something like, well, all I did was survive. And the man said, well, that's all you needed to do today, right? Like, that's all that is needed. And then, of course, surviving that day was important, because then they went back later and fought and won the war. And so that's kind of what you're saying, right? Like, you know, how we define our successes can vary day to day. Is that correct?
Yes, it's totally correct. And also we have to realize that you can lose your battle. It's okay to lose your battle today. Mm-hmm. It's fine, as long as you are progressing. And surviving is also a form of progression, where, you know, you may have got punched in the face today, but you will survive, or even slapped, as we all may know, you may have gotten slapped today. However, you're going to survive, and you're going to get out of that situation, and you will prevail. And that's all about, you know, it's all about the failure. It's all about the process, and it's always perfect to the story.
Those are such big concepts. Tell me this, with your book, who is kind of your core audience? Who is, like, if me and Mike are going throughout our day and we think, oh man, I need to give Dr. Eli Joseph's book to blank, who would you describe as the perfect audience for your book?
The ideal audience would probably have to be the readers between the ages of 18 and 21. Those that are leaving high school to get into college, or those that are about to graduate college.
I like that.
Because they will feel, yeah, because I think these are the group of people that they are so used to, you know, social media being mm-hmm. being their journal. And you know, in social media, they don't really like to talk about success. Hmm. And we laugh upon people that fail. We laugh upon people that have been embarrassed. And we don't even want to talk about how we've been embarrassed and how, and it's embarrassing to talk about our failure. So, and whenever we get, whenever we approach a level of adversity, those type of, those within the ages of 18 to 21, they tend to shy away from it. They tend to become depressed. So, and stress that they didn't pass.
So it sounds like a great gift to purchase in the next month or so for graduation. Like that's a high school gift, a graduation gift, college graduation gift. And tell us the name again in the book. Tell us the name.
The Perfect Rejection Resume.
The Perfect Rejection Resume by Dr. Eli Joseph. All right, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back with you. And then we're going to talk about a couple more things. So be right back.
Do you have a business idea but don't know where to start? The Central Florida Urban League offers an entrepreneurship and small business certification course that provides you with a toolbox for success. This course covers entrepreneurship, recognizing and evaluating opportunities, planning, starting, and operating a business, marketing and sales, venture capital and seed funding, and financial management. Enroll now. Call the Central Florida Urban League at 407-841-7654 or visit our website at cful.org.
Once again, here is John Crossman.
Having a conversation today with Dr. Eli Joseph. And Dr. Joseph, we were just talking about your book. Tell me the name again. I want to hear you say it.
The name is The Perfect Rejection Resume.
Perfect Rejection Resume. And we were just saying how every single person that needs to, that listens to this needs to buy that book for every single high school senior, college senior, buy that book for their graduation because it's a great book for them to read as they're entering in the next season of life. So that's cool stuff. So let's go back. Do you mind just talking to us a little bit about background, like where you were born, where you went to school? Would you just walk us through that a little bit?
No problem. So I was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York. I was born in the Methodist Hospital, which is now the New York Presbyterian Methodist Hospital at Columbia University. I'm black. I'm black. I'm African American. However, my family, my mom and my dad, they came from Haiti. So I'm of Haitian descent. And we had this notion that education was the key to success, right? You know, coming from immigrant household, it's like you have to work hard, you have to get good grades and have a name for yourself. So I was always pushed to the limit. I was always pushed to the limit as far as, you know, education. And I was always taught to excel in that realm. My father passed away when I was just 2 years old, though.
Wow.
So, yes, I had to rely on my grandfather, my uncle, basically to instill that father role. But at the same time, my mom held it down. She worked 3-4 jobs. She did the best that she can. And it's funny because I have two brothers as well. I'm the middle child, so you can tell that, you know, based on rejection and failure, I do suffer from the middle child syndrome. But yeah, I was always brought up on, you know, education being that key to success. And with education, you can have, like, you can apply it to anything. And hence, this is why, you know, like, as far as my life story and being able to graduate at such a young age, I remember I was 20 years old when I graduated my math degree.
Wow.
And I doubled back. I went back to school right after. And I graduated with my master's degree in business administration from Brooklyn College at the age of 21.
That is amazing.
And so it's amazing. But at the same time, I just felt like I get bored easily. And I'm more so of, okay, I've accomplished this goal, but what's next? And I just kept on moving along. And I remember receiving my doctorate at the age of 24 from Felician University, becoming the first ever graduate to even graduate with a degree in Doctor of Business Administration with a heavy focus in finance. And I did the majority of that, my studies at Columbia University, which I currently teach at that university as well. So it's more so of like education driving that, you know, that goal and the thought of, okay, you know, your merit comes from education. And the rest is history.
Wow. Well, you know, one of the things about me is I'm dyslexic. And so I have such respect for academia, and yet it's so hard for me. It's just super hard. And so when I think about you graduating with a degree in mathematics at 20, that just blows my mind, right? Like there's no way I could pull it off. So I just have extreme admiration for that. And then kind of as a segue into the other topic I wanted to get into is I've lectured once at Columbia University, and actually was there in the summer of 2019. And I was at a diversity in commercial real estate conference, and I was really happy and proud to be a part of that. One of the things I talked about is I announced that we created a full ride scholarship at the University of Florida in their master's of real estate program, so long as the undergraduate went to an HBCU. And I told the audience, I said, you know, the winner of all this is going to be the University of Florida, because they're going to get exposed to some students maybe they've never been exposed to before. And, you know, I've done a lot of lecturing colleges and across the country, but man, my best experience has been about at HBCUs. So let's talk a little bit about race. And one of the things is that a lot of my listeners kind of look like me, or, you know, close to my range. And I'm a middle-aged, you know, white guy. And I do think the vast majority of them really want to see race issues in America get better. I just, a lot of times when I encounter them and we talk about it, they don't know what to do. They kind of sort of are like, gosh, there's all these things that have happened and they're terrible and they're hard, but what do I actually do? So let's start with this. If I put you in a room with, like, you know, 60 white CEOs who were good guys, they were like, we want to help. And we want to help it with diversity and making a more healthful business environment for people of color, particularly black. What would you want them to hear?
Well, I would want them to, it's not all about, because it's so easy to, you know, put out like a scholarship fund or a fellowship grant. And it's what I would say to the 60 CEOs that are white is, you know, you don't want to treat us like a charity case. Mm. You don't want to treat us like a charity case. However, you would want to invest in our programs, invest in our businesses, invest in our education. So it's not more so of, okay, you know, here's a $30 million fund, and this is for people of color, right? It's great. It's a great gesture to have, but more so, okay, you know what? This is a five-year plan worth, you know, $30 million. And what we plan on doing is not only providing programs for, you know, for high school and college students, but also at the same time, you know, providing different programs for, you know, first-time home buyers and, you know, just creating a community and helping in that regard, and providing the funds, providing the resources, providing the mentorship as well. That way it's more so than just, okay, here's a donation and, you know, here's some press about it and that's that.
I really like follow up.
Yeah.
You know, what I hear you saying is like, I actually do a lecture about this where I talk about what's the difference between charity and relationship, and charity tends to be one-sided. It tends to be short term. It tends to be a crisis, where a relationship is, you know, both sides, and it tends to be forever, and it's healthy giving and receiving. And so what I hear you saying is focus on helping developing relationships. Don't look at it charitable. Think about it in a relationship way. So like when you're talking about invest, like an invest has an ROI, there's a return on that investment. So did I get it? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yes, it's perfectly aligned with what I'm trying to say. It's not just okay. It's not a one sided thing. It has to be a two way street. And this is why I talk about not only mentorship, but also reverse mentorship as well. In the sense that, you know, we are receiving mentorship of how you guys, as far how the CEOs got to their, you know, where they got to, mm-hmm. and we can learn from their story. But at the same time, CEOs have to be receptive to learning from our story and you know, how we can develop that relationship, the two-way relationship where everything is reciprocal. And that way, not only will the executives will have a ROI, to your point, but at the same time, we reap the benefits of, you know, growing a community and developing a community as well. And that's what's important more so than just, you know, providing a short-term, one-time, you know, donation for, you know, minority and black and African-American communities as well.
I think what you just said is genius. Now, Dr. Eli Joseph, just so you know, I do have 10 endowed scholarships at seven universities. So do be nice to my scholarships, okay? You can't just, you know. No, I'm teasing you. So here's what I wanted to get your response on this, is that I often tell students, college students, I'll say, look, you know, everyone has value. And of course, if you're in distant situations, there's different rankings. Like if there's a coach in athletes or a professor to students or a parent to child, and in business, you can have the boss and employees. But, you know, a lot of times bosses are neglected and they're lonely. And when you take a time to like affirm them, even when you're an intern, you affirm the CEO, that can be a very powerful thing. Or you write them a handwritten note or that kind of thing. And a lot of people miss that. And the real story I wanted to tell you was I was lecturing at a college, and it was a group of Black women, like a Black women organization from the college, who were interested in business. And so one of the things I asked them, I said, look, if we went to another college and there's a group of white fraternity boys who are all, you know, in the college, they're that college of business, do you think their goal is to be a CEO? And they were like, yes, probably. And I said, do you think being a CEO requires a skill of understanding diversity? And they said, yes. And I said, do you think that instinctively they probably understand diversity in a meaningful way? And they said, well, probably not. And so I said to these young Black ladies, I said, do you understand diversity? And they said, yes. And I said, so what you're telling me is you have something that you can teach them. And Dr. Joseph, it like blew their minds. I mean, they were like, they never thought about that in that context. And so what I was really trying to get across to them is that they can lead them, right? And if you see yourself as having value and you see yourself having worth and contributing, you know, and of course the other side has to receive that too. Man, that creates for powerful relationships. Is that what you're talking about? Is that an example of what you're saying?
Yes. It's a perfect example. You know, to your point, it's like everyone have value. And I always talk about how, you know, even if you think that your value is not as grandiose as a CEO of a Fortune 500 company's value. But you'd be surprised. You never know. And this is why I tell people, you got to share your story. Share your story, share your expertise, because, you know, even if you do suffer from that imposter syndrome, like you never know. People will probably gravitate towards your story rather than an executive story. And executives do learn from, you know, younger people. And it's give and take. And on top of that, you know, it's always important that, like, you have a value, you have a story, share it, you know. And people my age, and we're talking about people in their 20s that are just now getting out of college, getting into their careers, they are so afraid to just share. Even on LinkedIn, right? Mm-hmm. They're sure more of their personal life on Instagram or Facebook, but they'll be afraid to share their story, their life story, or the professional story on LinkedIn. And I tell people, like, just go ahead. The worst thing that can happen is you get some negative feedback. That's the worst that can happen. You won't get fired. You won't get retaliated against if you just share your story. And you never really know. So a higher ranking white CEO or white executive can gravitate to the story and say, okay, you know, let's hire you for a diversity and inclusion training, or let's hire you for, you know, something else. And you just never really know what might happen on the other side of your story.
That is so helpful. It's funny. I'm in a men's Bible study, and it's a real mix of guys in there. And one of the guys in there owns a landscaping company. And a while back he was telling a story, and he goes, well, I know all of you have had experience with, you know, pushing a mower and cutting your grass. He goes, well, except for Crossman over here. And I looked at him, I'm like, what are you talking about? It really hurt my feelings. And so, you know, I'm in a suit most of the time, kind of things. But I pulled him aside and said, man, you know, I was raised like poor working class, right? Like, you know, like when I was a kid, like the rich kids had birthday parties at McDonald's. I'm like, you know, I mean, it was just funny because, you know, I suffer from the imposter syndrome. I struggle with that. I have to work that through. I struggle. I mentioned dyslexia. I actually, a lot of my core, I'm an introvert, and a lot of stuff I've learned. So, man, I think what you're saying can provide oxygen for me and for everybody. Listen, got to wrap it up. Dr. Eli Joseph, you have been so helpful. Thank you so much for being a teacher and being a leader and being a mentor and somebody that I admire, and for your book and all the work you're doing to invest in young people. So thanks for being on the show.
Thank you. I really appreciate you for having me on.
Our pleasure. I hope everyone has a great rest of their day. And remember, support your local HBCU.
This has been Crossman Conversation, produced by a Crossman Career Builders Mark Radio Production.